Hello everyone and welcome back to the Donkey's Garage for episode 18. This is racing in Montreal at the Circuit Gilles Villeneuve. I'm doing this episode quite late after the race, but I just haven't been able to do it. So given that by now most people will know really what happened during the race, or will have had at least the opportunity to read the news, even re-watch it and so on, I think I am going to streamline a bit the episode, trying to just to cover the main things that happened, more the hot topics, rather than a description per se of the race. With that, I begin by mentioning the fact that Gilles Villeneuve was a Canadian racing driver, very famous, Gilles, whose son then pursued a career also in Formula One. He was very competitive, relatively famous, didn't reach, I think, the height of his father, who's Jacques himself, who's the son of Gilles Villeneuve. Jacques, then he was, I think, relatively known for his period during Formula One, where he shared the track with Schumacher. He was one of those drivers who attempted at dethroning Schumacher, and I think, as I say, he wasn't as competitive as his father. Gilles Villeneuve was quite a character. He drove for Ferrari and achieved, I think, a fair beat. I think he left a mark. Jacques instead was, I think, overstated sometimes, though competitive, but I wouldn't say he went down in history in the Hall of Fame. And then he's become very contentious with his comments, usually when he speaks to the media. He's very aggressive on the drivers, he's very critical, and this has led to some situations, sometimes talking about Red Bull, sometimes talking about, for instance, Hamilton or even Alonso and stuff like that, where it just seems that he's just punching below the belt to see what happens. With that said, the reason why I mention Gilles Villeneuve is that Leclerc wanted to pay tribute to Gilles Villeneuve, who was originally from Canada and who raced for Ferrari, so the link with the Scuderia is strong, and still I think the bond remains latent. And so in that regard, he had, I believe, a good idea of paying tribute, which is something that has been done quite often nowadays in Formula One, where drivers will choose different helmets from the past and sort of adapt them to their own style in order to reminisce one way or another the drivers who I guess they look up to, like they did for Niki Lauda when he passed away, or James Hunt with Lando Norris. With that in mind, Leclerc went ahead and designed a helmet that was reminiscent of Gilles Villeneuve's racing helmet. And then apparently there was this issue the family raised, saying you are not allowed to use our father's, Gilles' helmet design. And there was apparently then some backstage negotiations. He was supposed to remove the helmet. He wouldn't be able to use it. So in free practice too, he wasn't racing with the helmet with Gilles Villeneuve's design. And then eventually for qualifying, they reached an agreement. I'm not sure exactly what was the issue. I guess image rights, like personal rights, something like that, or sponsors, I have no idea. But at the end, they managed to reach an agreement and they allowed Charles Leclerc to race with a helmet. Then Jack appeared on TV giving an interview and said that the media had done far more of an issue out of it, that it was not something fundamental, just something that they wanted to talk with with Leclerc, because they hadn't actually told him that he was going to be wearing this helmet, particular design, and so on. I don't know. I mean, I would say that Jack is pretty strange sometimes. He's got some weird attitude. But I mean, the point, I guess, is fair. If he hadn't asked for permission, I guess he should have don't really see the point at the end of the day, because I mean he's doing something that is positive, that is, I mean it's not tarnishing, so to speak, their father's memory. So don't see what the fuss about it. But that's that. With regards to the free practices, also I need to mention that they were in very wet conditions, extremely wet, which meant that mostly they were just running around and trying to preserve the cars. We saw some mistakes going over the some of the chicanes. No major incidents though during the free practices, which is very good news, because you don't want to crash or have a big crash during free practice, as it's likely to tamper on your qualifying. With that said, I have to mention that this was something strange from the free practice, and that is that they were running inters in very, very wet conditions, where I would imagine they would have fitted extreme wet tires, so the blue tire. And these, I think, raises again the question of why would you have a full wet tire that is almost impossible to use, and why is it impossible to use? And that is because it's so hard to make it work at the right temperature. It's just the way they are. These Pirelli tires are designed. They're very difficult to work both in wet and dry conditions. They're very, I think, unique. They have to be careful. They have to be nourished somehow. It's not a tire that works in all conditions. And it's something that they will have to really consider and reconsider, rather, for 2025, I believe, because Bridgestone has applied for the right to supply tires to F1, which is an exclusive right. And so there's going to be a challenger. We know that for sure, that Michelin has already stated they're not interested, but there are all the manufacturers that perhaps might be interested, such as, I don't know, Hanuk or Firestone, like they do in the IndyCar. So there are the manufacturers that may supply tires that are a bit more easy to work around, more reliable in that sense. But the fact that at the end of the day they have a wet tire, full extreme wet tire, that is almost unusable, to the point that teams will avoid it to all costs and will rather use the intermediate tire in a very wet conditions, I think speaks loudly and just by itself. With that said, we move towards the qualifying, which was again in wet conditions, which, as always, wet conditions in qualifying means that the mindset is a bit different. You're not waiting for the track to build, because usually in dry conditions, the track will actually improve as the cars drive around for a period of time, because there's more rubber on the track, the temperature rises, and usually you have a bit more grip. Here, the way you set your mind in wet conditions is essentially you need to try to accumulate as many laps as possible, really gaining that confidence around the track, pushing a bit the limits, and knowing where to find that extra grip. So instead of going for one lap and then pitting and waiting for your next run, you're going to try to stay out and do as many laps as you can, and then eventually try to improve step by step in a very progressive way. And this is exactly what happened during the wet conditions in qualifying, both from Q1 to Q3. You saw the drivers trying to accumulate all those laps, trying to build up their confidence. And it worked. I mean, some drivers were fairly more lucky than others. I have to mention, for instance, the clairvoyance that Albon had, because the last run in Q3 was actually set on slicks, so on a dry compound, on softs, and that is because the rain stopped for about 5 minutes. He kind of got slightly better, good enough to put that lap on a soft tire. And he tried, he gave it a try on the first run during Q3, and he managed to do it, as did Hülkenberg. And by the time the other drivers actually realized it was not intermediates, it was softs, the compound to use, they had already lost a couple of laps, which in the meantime started raining again. So what you saw is drivers like Alonso, for instance, whose lap was actually done under wet conditions, so to speak, with intermediate tires. So the only three, I think the two drivers who managed to do a lap on soft tires during the qualifying was Max Verstappen, Nico Hülkenberg, and Albon. The rest, by the time they attempted it, it was too late on Q2 to jump to Q3, which was the situation which happened at Ferrari. So they were in Q2, they went on track on inters, but by the time they realized it was soft, they had to pit. They told Leclerc to stay out to try to set a lap. He set a lap which was, it was far too slow for the track conditions, and then he pitted again for softs, but by the time he fitted for softs again, it started raining again, so he was kind of going counter to the weather conditions. So it was quite a tricky situation. Some people got trapped. At the end of the day, Q3 sat a conventional grid, with one exception, of course, which was following Verstappen in P1. It was the Haas by Nico Hülkenberg, who sat a very, very competitive time. Hats off to him. Absolutely hats off to him. He was, I guess, lacking that he found the perfect sweet spot, which is something, for instance, Fernando Alonso was a bit more cautious about it. And the team was not as reactive, I would say, as Verstappen's and Nico's. In that sense, they didn't catch the moment where the track was at the driest conditions during Q3. So that's why that explains the difference. It's just a 1/10 at the end of the day, but it's still hats off to them. And then it was followed by Alonso on third position. Fourth was Lewis. Fifth, George. Then Esteban. Then Lando. Then Carlos. Then Oscar Piastri. And then Alexander Albon in P10. Followed by Charles P11. Perez P12. And Lance Stroll P13. And with that top 13, I think there's a clear picture that we can extract, which is that the two Mercedes actually were performing rather well in qualifying, which means that the upgrades they brought towards following actually Spain and towards the rest of the week of the season, that are actually working better, definitely better than the old spec, than the W14A, providing a bit of a car that is a bit more suitable, and as I will explain later in more detail, I think it's a stronger basis to work from towards the future. And then Sainz had quite a unsettling qualifying. There was an incident with regards to him impeding or causing a unsportsmanlike attitude during qualifying, which was that he kind of blocked Gasly's attempt at qualifying, and for that he received a three grip penalty, which I disagree with the penalty at the end of the day. It was at the chicane right before the main straight, which is it's a difficult chicane in that you can only go through one at a time. You cannot go in parallel. So they were all building up towards the moment in Q2, and at the end of the day, you kind of gather around, and by the last two corners, usually you will try to stop to leave a gap to whoever is coming in front of you. And that's just part of qualifying. And Gasly was there. Sainz he had people in front of him, and he tried to get out of the way. But he essentially couldn't, because there was nowhere else to go. And I say the same as I said with Leclerc in Monaco, where there is nowhere to go, where do you go? Because you cannot create space which doesn't exist. And this is something that stewards keep ignoring. It's very nice that they complain, but drivers have to complain, and they have to try to play the playbook, of course, but there was nowhere he could have sort of placed his car to avoid. I mean, he could have, of course, I mean, best scenario, he could have, you know, halted the car, he could have, you know, stopped the car, or really let the Gasly go but through much earlier. But of course, that would have meant that he would have lost his position towards qualifying, because they were all trying to run up to the straight with just a few seconds before the checkered flag in order to have that last attempt to qualifying. So I think it shows again the lack of understanding of how racing works by the stewards. I mean, they are very, very by the book and too little with the racing spirit. But that's that. Hamilton actually had a similar situation with Ocon in the hairpin, and somehow it didn't happen. No grid sanction, nothing, no penalty whatsoever was granted on for that occasion, which is surprising, because it seems that there's different attitude towards different drivers which are not very consistent. Because I mean, yes, impeding a driver in one place should correspond to impeding a driver in another place, but apparently the penalties are different. And Hamilton said, oh, sorry, I didn't see him on the mirror. But I mean, at the end of the day, that's your problem. You still caused exactly the same damage as Sainz did in this occasion. So I think, as always, the FIA seems to be so inconsistent that it kind of distorts the legitimate expectation principle and the trust in the system. You really don't know who is going to get what. I mean, you know for sure that Hamilton is never going to get penalized, because of course he's the holy boy of Formula One. God saved him from ever acting in an unsportsmanlike manner. And we know that, I don't know, although George Russell the same, I mean, that it seems that they are never at fault. It seems that anything they do can be sort of rationalized, whereas if somebody else does it, and I mention Verstappen, especially at the beginning, Fernando Alonso, or for that matter, I don't know, Carlos Sainz, they seem to go down on them like crazy. I mean, it's just, I think, inconsistent, unfair. But well, with that said, mentioning Perez did quite an unsuccessful qualifying again, which I mean adds pressure to his overall performance in this section of the season. He started really well, but then after a couple of unsuccessful races, he's starting to show some cracks. P12, he just didn't manage to really manage the traffic to be at the right moment, the right place at the right moment. But it's part of racing again. Perhaps not being helped very, very much by the team, because it's something that Red Bull is spot on with Max Verstappen, and then somehow, miraculously, they are not so spot on with Perez. With that said, I continue on to the race, mentioning that Verstappen, for the first time, I think, was closer to... But actually, the other way around. The rest of the front midfield were closer to Verstappen than we've seen in the past. That is because Verstappen was only 9 seconds ahead at the end of the race from Alonso, which, I mean, is coming down, or for whichever reason, maybe it's the track specificities. But at the end of the day, it's coming closer, which is very good news, and hopefully maybe this trend continues onwards, and by the end of the season you see that they are getting very, very close. Also to mention that Red Bull have already announced that they're working, or they're shifting progressively towards the 2024 car, which is very good news, and it shows how much pressure that is in Formula One. It's a very smart move, given that they have limitations on the car development side, to use next year's tokens, to use next year's resources already this year, so to speak, because next year's car is essentially an evolution of this one. So if you can start working on next year's cars, you're essentially just working on your actual car towards next year. So it's a very smart way to set the thing with one risk is that you're always going to be 1 year ahead of your competitors. So if somebody breaks really the mold and finds something like the zero part technology, you might find yourself 1 year then behind the rest. Also to mention that Red Bull are actually working on a zero part spec, just like Mercedes did. I think we'll have to wait to see what that results in, but there are chances that Red Bull will try it and maybe they can succeed at a model that is far more competitive than Mercedes. We know that it's a very challenging design, especially in terms of dragging, especially in terms of rear tires, because of the lack of side parts. You're really leaving all the car exposed to the airflow. But at the end of the day, it's something that should be tried, and only technology will provide that opportunity to really break that glass and achieve it if it can't be done, or if it's more advantageous than the pot design that we've traditionally seen in Formula One. With that said, moving on to the start of the race, at the grid, Verstappen first, then Alonso, then Hamilton, and then Russell. And very interestingly, off the grid, Hamilton had a superb start and overtook Alonso. He literally left it standing there. So Alonso lost the position, and by turn two, he was P3. And then the race really changed significantly for these two drivers, because Verstappen was evidently running off way, but then Hamilton really had to try to control Alonso behind him. It seemed that Alonso had more pace out from the start. The car was a bit more comfortable around the track, around the streets of Montreal. But then he was being chased by Russell himself. So it was a really, really ideal situation for Mercedes, because they could control Alonso. They could really push Russell to force Alonso to make an error, at the same time as Hamilton could just go away, or if Alonso was too fast, try to hold Alonso back and then have really Russell attempt to overtake him. So really interesting a scenario. At the end of the day, the whole scenario changed, or was affected by the accident caused by Russell hitting the wall at the corner right before the hairpin. It's a very good, it's a classic corner. It's like the Wall of Fame. At the end of the day, you're going over that chicane, you're going over the banana, and as you come off the banana, if you're a bit too harsh on that banana, you're going to be just airborne, and essentially by the time you kind of fall back to the track, the car is upset and you really have trouble regaining control of the car, and you essentially end up on the wall, which is what happened. He hit the rear right tire against the wall and it blew up, and eventually he had to kind of crawl back to the pits, where they had actually to check whether the car was still usable. They checked for suspension, they checked for maybe the gearbox if it was broken, they checked for this aspect, and a priori everything was working, so they fitted a new tire. And even though he was at the back of the grid, they let him go back out. From that moment onwards, Russell's race was different in a way that he had to actually kind of try to storm through the field and reach the highest position possible, which at the end of the day, he did a really good job on account that he was dead last after the pits. And by the time he retired later in the race, he was actually back in 8th position, which, congrats to him. He retired because they had some issues with regards to the rear brakes, the temperatures, which is very famous in Canada. It's a track where you brake very, very, very hard, so you really put all those components really on to test. And this is what happened. A lot of drivers we saw complaining or failing really to feel the brakes, because when they warm up, they kind of lose this the perfection. You lose a bit the touch. So That's that. Alonso then, coming back to him, he was behind Hamilton. He was far more, I think, competitive. And I mean, not all far more, but I mean, he was just spectacular. He was behind, he was studying, and essentially on the back straight, he would then overtake Hamilton just using the DRS straight onto the chicane on the inside. He did a perfect job just by the book. And that meant that from that moment onwards, the strategy, Alonso's strategy, then reverted to the original one. He was first and then Hamilton. Hamilton pitted and then Alonso had to cover for him. But so, I mean, thank God good for him that he was able to hold the undercut, and the positions didn't change. By the second time they changed tyres, they swapped tyres, Verstappen swapped for mediums again, which made the second stint last really, really long. And so Alonso didn't have new mediums, so he fitted hards, and hards meant that from lap 30 to 70 he had to go on that, actually from 40 to lap 70 he had to go on that set of hards, which was just a bit less competitive than the mediums that Hamilton just fitted. So the whole race was then Hamilton trying to get to Alonso. Alonso was also suffering from one or two issues which were not really disclosed. Probably he was instructed to do cast off, which means that you kind of lift off the pedal way before the braking zone in order to save some fuel. These also could be explained by some brake temperatures. So if you have some brake overheating on the brakes, you will try to really smooth that braking and try to nourish those brake pads. And this is essentially the race between Alonso and Hamilton for the next, from lap 40 to 70. Hamilton was coming like an absolute raptor. I mean, it was an F22 chasing an F15. He was just coming fast and coming hard on Alonso, but eventually Alonso managed to solve his issues, whatever they were. And by the time Hamilton came within under 2 seconds, Alonso then blasted off. I mean, he put all his talent back on behind the wheel. I mean, he always puts 100% of his talent, but he stopped doing all the savings and he went blast out, and then he managed to really get away from Hamilton and keep him at a distance. As I said, they were just about 9 seconds behind Verstappen, which almost lost it again, more or less at the same place where Russell lost the rear of his car, which shows that Verstappen did not have the easy race he's had in the past. And so, I mean, I think it's good signs for the future. Also to mention that Mercedes, on account of all these, they're working, I think, far, far, far better. It seems that the new design of the car is actually positive one. Russell, in spite of the accident, had a fairly decent weekend. I mean, rather competitive qualifying P4 and P5. And then Hamilton had a very competitive car. And at the end of the day, he finished P3 with a bunch. I mean, the podium was eventually, I think, one of the best podiums we've seen in the last years, with Verstappen, Alonso and Hamilton, and Adrian Newey, if you want to add him. A lot of talent on the podium. What else to mention? Albon's race, absolutely incredible. He had a blast of a race. He finished at the end P7, which speaks very highly of him. Very, very good. With just the two Ferraris and Perez ahead of him. So, which, I mean, I think he did a miracle, essentially, placing a Williams so high up the grid. Also to mention that actually Williams was using the new upgrades they were going to bring this season. So really good news. They actually mentioned that they had to do an incredible effort in order to bring the parts to Canada, because they have a bit of a shortage in parts, as it is the case often in Williams because of the financial issues, and I think resources also, as the new team principal mentioned earlier during the week. And with that in mind, Albon did an incredible race, then followed by Ocon and then Stroll. What can I say about Ocon? The Alpines, they seemed to be a bit dull during the whole race. They just weren't as competitive as they were, for instance, in Spain or in Monaco for that matter. So not a track that suited them that much. But, I mean, still top 10, which relatively decent. Stroll, I mean, qualifying per P13 and then still only coming across the line on P19 is a bit insufficient, not good enough. You expect a bit more from him. Quite gutter for that. Actually, I have to mention Piastri, which I forgot to mention his accident during qualifying, which caused a red flag. Because of the rain, he had an accident. He lost it on the second chicane and hit the wall. Relatively acceptable accident. I think it's not worth a slap on the wrist. I mean, at the end of the day, it was rainy conditions, stricken conditions, and he explained that he didn't have he accelerated and then lost back, so he didn't really feel the accelerator that much, the smoothness of the accelerator, so he lost it. With that, also to mention P13 at the race for Lando Norris, followed by Tsunoda and then Hülkenberg, who of course dropped, but that was expected. I mean, at the end of the day, he was P2, but then handed a 3-grid penalty, and then the performance of the car kind of placed him where unfortunately they are. With fighting with the AlphaTauris and the Alfa Romeos, which I think sounds like a fair race for them. The two cars that abandoned that had to retire from the race were George Russell and Logan Sargeant, who I think had an issue with the electronics of the car. Not a very good, great weekend for Logan Sargeant. He had trouble already in qualifying. He complained about some setup. Also, Zoe with the car, they had some electronic issues, and I guess the car didn't hold it through the race. And what else to say? Ferrari, I mean, it kind of leaves you with a bitter taste, because they had a performing car, quite competitive, rather competitive with the new upgrades. It was working rather well, and everything was ruined, or at least tarnished, by the qualifying, because the qualifying, the whole team, they just didn't perform well. Neither Sainz, nor Leclerc, nor the wall, none of them managed to really put everything together. The awareness of the track, of the conditions, of the weather conditions, they were just not there. And so they qualified relatively midfield, and that meant that they had to really have that kind of journey through the pack and try to reach somewhere. And that is what happened during the race. At the end, they did a really good result, because they finished P4 and P5, which they were aided by the safety car. Yes, but overall, the performance of the two Ferraris really, really good. Just a bit of a shame that they didn't qualify higher. I mean, it's as simple as that. Another driver that had to storm through the field, of course, Perez, which was coming from P11 and then kind of had to crawl back, did a relatively good race, no mistakes, but just when you're fighting for the championship, you can't have races like this where you finish P6. Yes, you minimize damages, but still, it's P6. He's just 9 points ahead of Alonso now. Not good news. and Verstappen is literally flying away. Oh, he's almost already secured the title unless something unforeseeable happens to him, like an accident that he's got to retire from now on every race for the rest of the season. With that said, I would have to award Donkey's award, but I'm having a lot of trouble figuring out who has had a bad weekend, very bad weekend. I mean, I am tempted to say Russell, but I mean, a mistake is a mistake. Russell is not the sort of guy that makes a mistake that often, so I'm really, really here puzzled as to whom could be worth the award. I'm going to have to say that it was Ferrari as a team who deserves that award. You might know, and I insist, I don't like to give the award to teams, but I think sometimes it's worth it because the drivers, they've made a good job, and it's the teams who've dropped the ball. And I think Ferrari, as it's often the case here, they've dropped the ball. And some of you might wonder, why don't we bring the Le Mans Ferrari team to Formula One? Because they did a magnificent job with no cracks whatsoever at Le Mans. And yet in Formula One, they seem to be just a bunch of amateurs. Yes, that could be a good argument. That could be a good thing to mention. And with that, I think I'm going to conclude the episode by saying it was Ferrari, once again, they deserve the Donkey's Award, and I really encourage them to really set a kind of on a paper what's the matter, what's wrong with the team. There are a lot of areas that they need to improve. It's something that Frédéric Vasseur has been really, really transparent in a way. He's acknowledged that there are issues that need to be solved, but I just don't see them working as of yet. The results, they seem not to be implemented. They still make mistakes that are not acceptable and that they're not that difficult to solve. Things like just sticking your head out and checking whether it's raining or not. I will make the same comment for Aston Martin as I'm making now for Ferrari during the Monaco race, where Aston Martin was wondering whether it was raining or not. Sometimes electronics or all the software devices you may have that actually are worth millions are useless, and the most reliable technique you can use is actually your gut feeling, the very things that you can actually feel, that you can touch, that you can sense. And in case it's raining, just stick your hand out and feel if it's raining or not. Or else ask a Galician guy from the north of Spain to tell you whether it's going to rain or not, because they are renowned for their abilities to foretell the weather. On that note, on that funny joke, I have to say, for those who've got some sense of humor on a Wednesday morning, I will encourage you to have a very good day. Oh, no, yeah, is it a Wednesday? Yeah, it's a Wednesday. It's a Friday morning. So on that note, thank you very much for listening as always. I hope I'm not too late, though you will still have enjoyed the episode. And it's been somewhat illuminating as to what happened during the race. And with that said, as always, subscribe, like, leave a comment, and share, of course. Have a good day, and thank you very much for listening.